This is Stephanie Rubel from the Stanford Alumni Association. I'd like to welcome our listeners to our fifth book of the 2014-2015 Book Salon season, Waiting for Godot by Samuel Beckett. This month, we're sitting down with our host, Professor Helen Brooks. Helen earned her PhD in English and Humanities at Stanford in 1980. She's a senior lecturer emerita of the English Department in the program in Feminist, Gender, and Sexuality Studies. She teaches courses on John Donne, Shakespeare, Renaissance and Early Modern Poetry, Introduction to Interdisciplinary Studies in Humanities, graduate seminars on Renaissance, Early Modern Intellectual and Cultural History, and Theoretical Approaches to Literature. Helen, thanks so much for taking time to chat with me about Waiting for Godot.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here today.
Oh, great. We're happy to have you. So can you talk to us about why you chose this book?
Well, first of all, I will say it's a play. And so the students say, oh, this isn't a book, this is a play. And that's supposed to change our conception of it. Mm-hmm. And so I chose it because I think it captures so well the kind of mindset that we experience so much in modern literature and that actually, and from my point of view, is launched in the early modern period. So we begin to see this in Shakespeare, and another writer I study, John Donne. We see it in their work. Suddenly there are bodies on stage, and we've moved from the kind of medieval world into the early modern world. But not only bodies on stage, but a plurality of bodies. And so some studies suggest that theater is inviting us to kind of withhold judgment and to try to open our minds to a plurality of voices, and to try to understand human experience in that context rather than making a kind of rapid judgment about someone. So we call it dramatic sympathy, and maybe we could look at it more today, I think, in our world around us to try to understand why sometimes we are witnessing behavior that is very, very troubling. So I chose the play because it does, I think, capture a lot about the modern world. And then I do a lot of work in neuroscience and cognitive theory, and I'm going to share a bit of that today to kind of open up our minds to what's happening on stage and what these writers are invoking in us as an audience, a mindset that I think we could perhaps develop more. So this play is perfect, I think, for that, and we'll, I'm sure, talk about it more. So I think it captures a lot. And Beckett was very interested in that in the early modern world. So there's a lot in his writing about looking back at that world and that kind of opening up of the world to theater. And so there's some connections maybe we can talk about today.
Great. So you you mentioned that we have a lot of discussion coming towards us. So can you point out some issues from Waiting for Godot that our readers might find interesting to discuss?
Oh.
Just a few.
Yes, there are several. I think, yes, in Godot, I think the interesting thing is, first of all, I usually invite students to look at the opening and the closing of this play and to see how similar they are. And you're saying, has anything happened? And so I want you to think about what the opening lines suggest and nothing to be done. And at the end of the play, to see how Beckett is framing this play and what our impulse might be to suggest, well, boring, you know, then I don't have any interest in looking at it. But I think what Beckett wants us to do is to look at life and to explore this sense of, are we doing anything or is it becoming kind of repetitive? He said one of the things he's very interested in is impotence, indeterminacy, and that he wanted to focus on that in his text and to leave that the mind open to experience our own consciousness. In other words, if we're not receiving some kind of answer in the play to our sort of inquiry into what it means, he wanted us to know that we have a mind that is pursuing these kind of answers, and he wanted us to experience that And if he said that if he felt that if he kept supplying answers and meaning, we never really encountered ourselves and our inquiry into what he calls this kind of modern consciousness of thought. So I want us to think about that a bit today, how the play leaves us without answers, and what we encounter when we don't have an answer supplied. Do we understand ourselves better and our own impulses, and that we have this very rich space in which we can navigate if we're not constantly being fed answers. So we'll talk about that a bit more, but I want us to think about, you know, has anything happened from the beginning to the ending of the play? And what Beckett ultimately said was, you know, are we always waiting? Can you think of a day? I love it.
Some days.
Just as soon as I do this, I'll do that, and then I'll do this, and then I'll do that. So he wanted us to become aware of that impulse in human nature and what that waiting might actually be for. And we'll look at that word gado, G-O-D. But then he puts the O-T on the end, which it makes it, turns it into a diminutive, a kind of miniature God, and so that it doesn't take over, but it is there always, according to Beckett, sort of beckoning us. So we'll talk about that.
That sounds great.
Someone said beckoning and Beckett? Are they going? He uses that word, so is Beckett beckoning us? Anyway, we'll talk about that.
We have a lot of ties, it sounds like, to discuss. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Will you talk to us about what your favorite part of the play is and why?
Well, maybe I alluded to that a moment ago. I like to work with the opening and the closing of this play, especially when I'm teaching it, and to think about how he stages the play in the beginning and how he stages the play at the ending, and to think about whether we see changes, whether the words are very similar, nothing to be done, and what that might signify. So we do a very close study of the opening and closing of the play, and to see how that the interior of that play navigates that to bring us essentially to a same physical space, but are we mentally in a different space by the time we have explored what I think for him is our kind of inner consciousness. So I work with those pretty closely in teaching it, and it's really interesting to see that those differences. A lot of my work is in neuroscience and cognitive theory, so I can tell you some of that work is so exciting. I cannot hear the neuroscientists are coming over to the literature department, and what they're finding, you know, in cognitive theory and all in literature is just really stimulating. So a lot of my work and my teaching focus on how literature and the arts in some ways inspire us or call us to look at things perhaps in a new way, such as I was saying with this early modern theater pluralism. In other words, you know, we've moved from the kind of medieval, and I don't want to generalize too much, but overall a kind of medieval kind of top-down kind of mentality to the early modern world, where we begin to see this kind of leveling and more voices, such as Shakespeare and all, and what that's calling on us as an audience to engage in as we watch the play. So if we sort of take Shakespeare at his word to please don't judge while you're watching, you know, and as I was saying, students say take it to the streets, you know, it's a wonderful mindset, and to try to understand where they're coming from before judging them outright. So I intend to sort of focus on those things and bring in neuroscience and cognitive theory, because the work is just unbelievably exciting that they're doing, you know, and so I try to share that with students, and we explore it a bit.
That's great. Yeah, I know we have a lot of overlap in our departments on campus.
Oh, do you?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure we're looking forward to this discussion.
That's right. And so you'll say, oh, no, they're going to come over and control it. No, they're coming over because they want to work with you on it, you know. And it's wonderful to see the disciplines working together. And my PhD is in English and interdisciplinary studies. So it's true. Literature is very interdisciplinary. The arts are very interdisciplinary. And the more we understand about the culture, the forms, perspective, you know, gender and all of it, the richer that can be experience that can be for us. So, I really do feel we need to bring in more, you know, students really like that. So, and it also ties in with the period, you know, the historical period. So you're bringing in the history and why would suddenly, you know, theater emerge? Mm-hmm. Bodies on stage, you know, in the modern world. And so we explore that. We don't think about it enough, I think. You know, giving voice to different perspectives, that's the modern world, you know. And so it's really interesting. So I teach it in the context of intellectual and cultural history. And it's really, and it's getting big. But it's really exciting. Yeah, I love doing it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me today and picking out Waiting for Godot.
You're absolutely welcome. So, boy, that was short.
No, it's fine. That was actually like our medium length.
Is that what
you
do?
Yeah, it's about right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's perfect.